This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Bruce Herbert, founder and chief executive of Newground Social Investment, a social purpose corporation dedicated to socially responsible investing and shareholder advocacy. Bruce Herbert is here to tell us about progress made by shareholder advocacy in creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during 2018. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you, Diane. It's great to be back again.
Remind us, what is socially responsible investing?
Well, socially responsible investing, the acronym is SRI, also stands for sustainable, responsible, and impact investing. And it really is a way by which investors can use the leverage that is implied by their ownership of assets, stocks, to really advocate for positive outcomes in companies. It often has been described as a stool that has three legs. And the first leg is screening, and that's looking for companies that you particularly want and find appealing, or looking to get out of companies, sell out of a portfolio, the stock of companies who are engaged in activities that are not appealing. So that's the first leg, is screening, and has the inclusionary flavor plus the exclusionary flavor. The second leg is microcredit lending or community investment, also called impact investing. And that was what Muhammad Yunus won the Nobel Peace Prize for in 2006. And Diane, what that does is it brings really necessary capital access and banking services available to people, groups, and regions of the world that have been traditionally underserved, if not outright excluded, and changes lives and benefits lives on the ground. Now, the third leg of the three-leg stool is shareholder engagement. And that's what we're here in particular to talk about today. And shareholder engagement, in contrast to selling your shares of stock if a company is doing something that you don't find attractive or desirable, you use your rights as shareholders to actively talk to the company about improving their practices. So this three-leg stool sits on a floor of what we call policy work. And that's really working really quite diligently to change the rules of the game and make them more fair and robustly serving humankind as a whole, as well as the environment.
How widespread is socially responsible investing?
Oh, it's very widespread, and it has been growing quite exponentially. The U.S. SIF, the Sustainable Investment Forum, every 2 years publishes a biennial report called the Trends Report. And the last one was in 2016. The next one will be out in a few months at the end of this year. But $8.7 trillion is invested in one fashion or another of these three areas that I described. And that makes it one out of every $5 that actually is under professional management in the United States. Also, we've seen essentially every major firm in the marketplace adopt an impact investing or create an impact investing division. So we've seen it be very, very widespread.
Say more about how shareholder advocacy is used to create positive change in publicly traded corporations.
Well, it is one of the prime catalysts for encouraging transformative behavior. Now, mind you, these are behaviors that are also, over time, more profitable. One of the things that's been interesting to me over the years, and I've been doing this a quarter century or longer now, is that when you take a truly long-term perspective, which virtually every investor and every manager of a big company says they have, it becomes almost impossible to not do the right thing. However, in contrast, if you take the next quarterly earnings report, which is only 90 days from now, and use that as your marker of success or progress, then it becomes almost impossible to do the right thing. So the tool of shareholder engagement, the process is set up by the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the rules around it are pretty straightforward. There are many rules, but the main ones in terms of qualification are that one has to own $2,000 worth of stock, and that's dollars, not shares, and you have to have held that position for a year by the time that you file the shareholder proposal. Then that gives any shareholder who has that quantity of shares the right to place something into the proxy. Now, it's not automatic. There are rules, and if something's very self-serving, if something isn't germane to shareholders at large, and so forth, the company can take action to try and block it being in the proxy, which they do quite a lot, and we have quite a lot of experience, you know, defending these proposals and making sure that they do come to the light of day and receive a vote. But it's that leverage that comes from educating and talking to shareholders at large that really creates the beneficial outcomes that we've seen so much.
Who or what groups are most involved in shareholder advocacy?
There are a wide range of groups. from public pension funds to states to individual investment managers like Newground to mutual funds to individuals to unions and endowments and foundations and faith-based organizations. It's very, very broad. And as I've said now, virtually every major firm of any financial sort is starting to do its own. Now, they tend not yet to do shareholder engagement. They tend to do more of the screening. So the really astute investor will want to make sure that they're getting what they want when they join the impact investment community. But it's a very, very broad tent, if you will.
What do you consider to be the highlights of the 2018 proxy season?
Well, there were many. I mean, there were highlights and lowlights, and we'll maybe talk a little bit more about some of that. I mean, it's been a challenging year. I mentioned the policy work, and I'll just say a word. There's a tremendous effort on behalf of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, the National Association of Manufacturers, and others to really try and undercut, if not, in essence, outlaw, if you will, shareholder engagement. But we've been fighting that quite diligently. We might talk more about that in a bit. But we had a number of majority votes, at least 6 majority votes over 50%, and at least 60 proposals that got better than 30%. Now, 30% might not sound like a lot, but I want to place that into a certain context. When you consider that these major companies, a large portion of their shares is controlled. It's already controlled directly or indirectly by management, sometimes even still by founding families. So if you consider the independent shares, the ones that are outside of management control, 30% of the independent shares is really quite an important outcome. But we've talked about McDonald's in the past in terms of their world-benefiting steps with pesticides. Well, this year they pledged to end all use of polystyrene by the next year. And it's a petroleum-based and very difficult to recycle. They also, McDonald's, set a science-based greenhouse gas reduction target. And to mention, a lot of companies have targets for greenhouse gas reduction, but it's just an absolute, like, we're here and we want to take it to there. It's lower than it was before, which is good. It's on the right path. It's moving in the right direction. But it's not establishing the target according to the science-based metrics that are necessary for us to achieve a 2-degree scenario and to really fulfill everything that was promised and agreed to through the Paris Climate Accord. A very important initiative that started just this year is around opioid use and going to the companies and talking to them about addressing that. I mean, one company in particular, AmerisourceBergen, the second largest producer of opioids, they shipped tens of millions of pills to small West Virginia pharmacies where there's not even anywhere near the population, and they've gotten into great trouble over that. So the coalition was just launched in October of 2017 by ICCR, ICCR being the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility. And now they have a coalition of investors that's better than $2.2 trillion asset dollars in assets under management, including state treasurers, you know, institutions of all the sorts and stripes that we talked about earlier. And what this campaign is doing, Diane, is it's using a corporate governance lens to focus on the role of major drug makers, the distributors, as well as the treatment manufacturers, and it calls for more transparency and accountability for the publicly traded companies about the risks that arise out of this. A number of the organizations are faith-based organizations that themselves have healthcare facilities, so they have been on the front line of treating the victims of this opioid crisis. I'll mention Chevron in passing, which is a company that we did some work with. We put together Newground and Zevin Asset Management. We put together a coalition of 36 investors, $109.4 billion, and wrote to the company, there's a new CEO at the helm. And we hope that that might create an opening for a different track, a different way of approaching, particularly issues around Ecuador and cleanup of really horrible pollution, massive pollution down there. And so we put that letter together and wrote to the company. And then the world's largest human rights organization, Avaaz.org, actually heard about our efforts, and they put together a petition to Chevron's largest shareholder, which is Vanguard Funds, and more than 900,000 people endorsed that petition asking Vanguard to use their rights as shareholders, as the largest shareholder, to encourage the company in this direction. What's happened down in Ecuador, Ecuadorian Amazon, is being called the Amazon's Chernobyl. It is really that massive of scale. We'll talk about lobbying and political expenditures perhaps separately. But one thing just to mention there, AT&T, when papers were released in relation to the Trump investigation of Russian meddling and so forth, the lawyer, Michael Cohen, showed up having made payments through AT&T. So that put AT&T on the spotlight, and they have a proposal up for a vote there asking for more transparency and accountability in terms of political spending.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Bruce Herbert, founder and chief executive of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during 2018. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. We've said a bit about this already, but how and to what extent has shareholder advocacy addressed climate change during 2018?
Well, it's been quite a strong focus. I might mention that in terms of shareholder proposals overall, 20% of them were on climate-related topics. Another 20% were on the corporate political activity and lobbying, and roughly 12% on sustainability issues. And these are about the same ratios as we had last year, but those three together comprise a little bit better than half of all the proposals. And then another third divide fairly evenly into slices around human rights and board diversity, worker safety, and so forth. And the last sliver, last 15% or so, were on health issues and board oversight. There actually were a few proposals by very conservative groups trying to kind of turn the tide against what they see as a rush to PC-ness, but they have never gotten much attention, really, or support. In terms of climate change in particular, as I mentioned, 20% of resolutions as a whole were in that arena and a number of the majority votes. And you'll remember last year we had a 63% vote at ExxonMobil. And what's unfortunate is that we've had these majority votes at the oil and gas companies, but they have not done much subsequently to respond to that. So there's a good game being talked, but it's not yet, and I emphasize the word yet, not yet really being reflected in terms of steps and actions that we as shareholders can see. You know, it's quite possible, Diane, that a number of companies are doing things, putting things together, marshaling resources, getting ready. Companies don't like to go off half-cocked and sort of say, here's what we're thinking, here's what we're doing. They like to say, this is what we're doing. Be very precise and complete about it. So it's been a year since that really important vote at ExxonMobil. So I'm in hopes that we'll see more as time goes on. But so far, we really haven't. But there's the Shareholder Initiative on Climate and Sustainability. And that organization, the two areas of greatest focus have been greenhouse gas resolutions and then carbon asset risk, you know, looking at the assets that are locked in the ground and hoping to not get them up and have them be burned. So those are the two main categories, but a number of other sustainability-related things all the way down to some on methane, some on hydraulic fracturing, and so forth.
Would you tell us about Climate Action 100+?
Sure. That's a relatively new organization. And it's more than 100 organizations involved in it, but it's relatively new in founding. It has a 5-year time horizon that it's trying to have its initial formation around. And it's led by investors who engage with the world's largest corporate greenhouse gas emitters to improve their performance in this arena. To date, there are 279 investors and nearly $30 trillion U.S. dollars in assets under management. And it's designed to implement the investor commitment first set out in the Global Initiative Statement on Climate Change. That was done in the months leading up to the Paris Climate Accord. There were three or four major founding investors, including CalPERS in California, but also the Australian Super. That's their largest pension fund. And HSBC, their global asset management arm, and an insurance company, Manulife Asset Management. So they really led the formation. And the initiative really aims to secure commitments from the boards and senior management to meaningfully address the issues that are arising out of their position as greenhouse gas emitters. But in contrast to the carbon asset risk, you know, keeping fossil fuels in the ground and unburned, these are dealing with the companies that already are producing a lot of greenhouse gas.
How effective do you think this approach is likely to be?
Well, I think it's very promising. Whenever people come together, I mean, that's our opportunity to really have an impact, is when we come together. each of us singing even a good song, but out in the vast silences of our own space, don't have a hope of having anywhere near as much impact as when we come together. But large numbers of dollars and shares, as is represented by this initiative, particularly with a concerted focus and a uniform ask of companies and management, it makes it much more compelling, much more difficult for companies to avoid, and frankly, we'll have the votes to back up the requests, because then proposals will be on the docket for a vote on those topics. So I'm very optimistic.
What progress have shareholder advocates made during 2018 in regard to political spending and lobbying by corporations?
Diane, that's another area that has been very strong for some years. And roughly 20% of all of the proposals fell into that arena, both political spending and lobbying combined. So the number of resolutions remains high. It was roughly 80 resolutions in 2018. And support for them has been surging. It topped 35% at 15 of the companies this year. And earlier I mentioned how when you think about the shares that are independent from management and board, that can be quite an important majority of the independent and informed shareholders. And so last year's average was only 30%, so it's bumped 5 percentage points in just 1 year. You know, Alliant Energy, Allstate, Charles Schwab, Equifax, Ford, I mean, there's a large list of companies that have gotten 30s and 40% votes. And important in this arena, now we are taking company by company. There's now a legislative process, and the Corporate Political Disclosure Act of 2018 is actually in formation looking for sponsors. And what that would do is actually require these levels and kinds of transparency across the board. And we think that's valuable and important because it puts an even playing field for all the companies together. And mutual fund support for these kinds of proposals has come around. It's been heretofore the major fund companies like the Vanguards and the Fidelities of the world and, you know, BlackRock and State Street and so forth, they have uniformly not supported shareholder proposals at all. But they are slowly moving into alignment with our camp. And it's because they see the efficacy of it from a short-term and a long-term sustainability and profitability perspective. And this has been the tip of the spear, if you will, in terms of the types of proposals that they've been willing to really get behind. So these developments are important. And it's fair to say that also with the progress, they also are some of the biggest laggards on other areas. But in this area, they're doing well. And there are two flavors of political spending. And one is on lobbying, and one is on the actual expenditures in political process and ballot initiatives and things like that. Companies have been much more willing to disclose the political part of that as opposed to the lobbying part of that. But the lobbying part of it is the elephant in the room. It's really the large amount of money. When we talk about dark money in politics, money being funneled through third parties like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and others, that then it goes into the political process but never has a name attached to it. We think that's highly detrimental to the political process. In fact, the Citizens United Supreme Court case that presumed transparency. I mean, they said, yes, people, even corporations, should be able to spend, but it presumed that we would know who was making that spending, and that part of the equation has not been lived up to at this point. So it's a very important arena. There's really not an issue or an area that's not being impacted, either frontally or kind of around the corner, by these spendings.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Bruce Herbert, founder and chief executive of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during 2018. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. Overall, how responsive are companies to shareholder advocacy at present?
Well, as we've talked about in the past, some companies and some industries are more responsive than others. But it's fair to say that more than 60% of shareholder proposals that actually are filed do end up being withdrawn. They actually don't go into the proxy. They don't get a vote. Why? It's because companies have actually seen the efficacy of the request, have seen that it can be done, number one, that it doesn't harm shareholder value, number two, might even be profitable. And so they agree to take these steps. And so as shareholders, we view that as the highest and best outcome. Going to a vote, frankly, means that we haven't been persuasive enough. or cogent enough in persuading companies to do what we think is the right thing. So oil and gas as an industry has probably been the least responsive. I mean, we saw a majority vote at ExxonMobil last year. So far, they haven't really done anything. Now, maybe they're working behind the scenes, trying to put something together. We hope so. But as shareholders, we haven't seen it. Now, on the other hand, we do see enormous change in consumer product arena. I mean, some of the victories this year regarding ocean plastics at McDonald's, Starbucks, there was a proposal that got withdrawn, and they agreed to recycling of cups. So that's very beneficial. And Dunkin' Donuts, their agreements will reduce by 2 billion the number of styrofoam cups that will be put out into the environment. And over the past few years, Unilever and Procter & Gamble, Colgate-Palmolive, have all agreed to eliminate non-recyclable packaging by 2020, just a couple of years from now. Non-recyclable packaging, that means everything that comes will be able to be recycled and go into the reuse. We've also seen over the past few years, KFC and Wendy's and Burger King and McDonald's all have eliminated poultry raised with human antibiotics. So there's a lot that's going on that's very beneficial. And as well, in the lobbying arena, 48% of the largest 300 companies in America actually have some form of policies on the books that they are actively working toward. Now, we continue to talk to them about improving the quality, level, and depth of those disclosures, but there's a lot that is going on and has gone on, and we're hopeful even for some of the laggards. But we're in a challenging area. I mentioned how the Business Roundtable, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, the Manhattan Institute, and all others, they formed a coalition, and they're trying to really eviscerate the shareholder engagement, the rules around it. We mentioned last year about the so-called Financial Choice Act. Well, that did die in the Senate, but all the worst elements of it are being filtered out and showing up in other pieces of legislation. And there's an initiative that was just created by these organizations that I mentioned called the Main Street Investor Coalition. Boy, that sounds wholesome and apple pie now, doesn't it? But in reality, it is all of these big entities of dark money, sources of dark money, have funneled $10 million into it. And they got a Trump appointee to head it. And they're working on trying to increase the resubmission thresholds. And mind you, the proposals are 500 words. That's a limit established by the SEC. So in 500 words, you have to try and convey the complexity of a human rights issue, of an environmental sustainability concern, of some sort of a governance proposal. It takes time of that being on the proxy, of people becoming familiar with it and then reading it and understanding it and so forth, for votes to build up. And right now, our system works superbly well in allowing that to happen. There are so many issues that now get really quite large votes, even majority votes, that started out getting 3%, 4%, 5%, 7%. Companies and their trade associations are finding it very threatening, and not for the first time, but really in a fresh way, because the size of the votes are rising so much and coming so close to the core of management and board's prerogatives. I mean, there are shareholder proposals with clawback provisions. So if management acts poorly, their income can be taken back. In fact, Wells Fargo, who acted very poorly in the last few years, several $100 million of fines and so forth that they have been levied with, shareholders don't have to bear the brunt of, because there was a clawback provision that took back these ill-gotten gains from the senior executives. And where did that come from? That came from a shareholder-sponsored proposal that was put in 2 years ago, and it was passed and implemented, and then the debacle about the credit card fraud and account opening fraud and everything came to pass. And darn good thing that that was there. So companies and their trade associations are finding it very threatening, which is why we're seeing so much of a pushback now.
What are the greatest successes of the 2018 proxy season in your view?
First and foremost, I think the fact that we held back the so-called Financial Choice Act. We mentioned the opioid piece, 6 majority votes at a variety of different companies, the large number of other votes, a lot of what we've mentioned already. In climate change, in the coming together of the Climate Action 100, these are some of the most important things. And more generally, the fact that so many companies have stepped up and said, irrespective of what the Trump administration is doing in regard to pulling out of the climate Paris Accord, we're going to keep forward with our efforts and maintain our momentum, because we see it as not only societally and environmentally critical, we see it as adding to shareholder value.
And what are the greatest disappointments of the 2018 proxy season?
Well, a part of that whole machination to change the rules did result in a rule change. It was November 30th of last year, 17, and the SEC, actually without a consultation from the progressive advocates, I'm sure they had lots of consultation with some of the aforementioned parties, Chamber of Commerce, Business Roundtable, and so forth. What it did, Diane, is it created the opportunity for boards to opine on whether or not they thought a shareholder proposal should be entertained. Well, if that's not the fox guarding the hen house, it's very interesting. And so it threw a lot of the shareholder proxy season into turmoil and confusion, because some companies would get a board opinion on any proposal that came up, other companies didn't. And things that had been very straightforward heretofore all of a sudden were being knocked out and precluded. Even when they had gotten big votes, 20, 30, 40%, they were being kept off of proxies in subsequent years because of this new provision and a very seemingly inconsistent application of the new rule with the SEC. One in particular was the EOH Energy. They had received something related to greenhouse gas emission targets. So many of those had been voted on it, we thought it was safe at the SEC, SEC-proof, if you will. But given the new wrinkle, given the new turn of events, it was knocked out. And it actually could set a very difficult precedent. Of course, it was knocked out on particular grounds. So now we have the information of what those grounds were. So we can try to craft and rewrite. But it takes the focus and attention away from the conversations that are so needed to happen about climate change, about reducing emissions, about enhancing profitability and respecting Earth's systems, and puts it back on, oh, are you getting the right word count? Does this, tick this box or not that box in terms of the minutiae of SEC rule? It takes the focus off of the game, and that's always detrimental. So that's the biggest disappointment, I would say.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, two things. Whenever money moves, it has an impact. And like it or not, we live in a money culture. And so if investors are thoughtful about how they use their investments, they have an opportunity to shape a better world. And if you think about it, the things that economics measures, there's a huge gulf between that and what humans actually value. And so we can invest in a way that's consistent with and supportive of our larger goals and values in the world. And it has been so thoroughly put to rest, the old Wall Street myth that you have to give up return. You have to expect to have lower returns by investing socially. That's just not the case anymore. But again, hearkening back to what we said earlier, joining in community. So if you want to do so, pick a company that's a mutual fund that is an avowedly SRI fund family. Pick a money manager that is their main goal. I mentioned that a lot of the firms have an impact sort of division, but I'll pick on Merrill Lynch since that was my alma mater. You know, Merrill Lynch, if you invest at Merrill Lynch, then every dollar, every asset under management, every commission trade and so forth goes to support Merrill Lynch's view of the world. Now, yes, they have this nice green sustainability-oriented division, but as a whole, they still are lobbying to undo regulation, to stop meaningful legislation and so forth. We call it feeding the dragon. So be aware of what your money is doing, where it's doing it, and also the community of support that's available to help you do something better.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Bruce.
It's a pleasure as always. Thank you.
You were just listening to Bruce Herbert, founder and chief executive of Newground Social Investment. For more information, check on the web at newground.net and investorvoice.net. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.